this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests. In the first half, we have Rosie Wong, and she's going to be talking about how our diets are going. And in the second half, we have the mindset coach, Scott Bland. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
It's truly never too late to begin exercising, new research shows, even for people who are couch potatoes in their youth. Embarking on a regimen of regular exercise in middle age can still greatly cut the odds for death from any cause, a major new study finds. The study tracked the health and lifetime exercise patterns of more than 315,000 people who were members of AARP. The investigators found that folks who'd exercised all their lives had a 36% lower risk of dying during the study period compared to people who'd never exercised. But perhaps surprisingly, people who'd been inactive in youth but decided to get more physical in their 40s and 50s saw almost the same decline, 35%, in their odds for an early death. The study findings were published online March 8th in JAMA Network Open. A new study challenges the long-held belief that multiple sclerosis can flare up right after pregnancy in women with the relapsing, remitting form of the disease. In that type of MS, symptoms arise, then go into periods of remission. The theory that women have an increased risk of relapse is more than 20 years old, so the researchers wanted to determine if it was true. They reviewed data from California on 466 pregnancies among 375 women with MS from 2008 to 2016. 38% of the women did not receive any treatment for MS in the year before they became pregnant. The study is scheduled to be presented at the American Academy of Neurology's annual meeting in Philadelphia in May. A lot of people struggle to maintain their ideal weight, but repeatedly losing and regaining pounds, known as yo-yo dieting, probably won't do your heart any favors. A new study found that women who lost at least 10 pounds, but then put that weight back on within a year, were more likely to have risk factors for heart disease. The more time someone went on a yo-yo diet, the worse their heart health. Yo-yo dieting also wasn't helping women keep their weight in a healthy range. The study found that yo-yo dieters were 82% less likely to be at an optimal weight. The study included almost 500 women in the New York City area. Their average age was 37, and nearly two-thirds were from racial or ethnic minorities. Almost three-quarters of the women reported yo-yo dieting at least once. The findings were to be presented last week at an American Heart Association meeting in Houston. Want a daytime pick-me-up that may also benefit your blood pressure? Take a nap, researchers suggested. Dr. Manolos Kalastratos, a cardiologist at Asklepion General Hospital in Voula, Greece, said midday sleep appears to lower blood pressure levels at the same magnitude as other lifestyle changes. For each hour you nap, systolic blood pressure drops an average of 3 millimeters of mercury, the researchers found. Taking a low-dose blood pressure drug can lower your level an average of 5 to 7 millimeters, while a nap can reduce overall blood pressure an average of 5 millimeters, the study authors said. The study findings are scheduled to be presented later this month at the American College of Cardiology annual meeting in New Orleans.
We have Rosie Wong with a Master's of Science, and she's the Director of the Academics and an instructor of both the Nutritional Consultant and Natural Chefs program at Bowman College in Berkeley, California. For 30 years, Bowman College, a nonprofit organization, has spread personal, community, and global wellness through increased awareness of the healing power of fresh food. It's so good to have you on the radio today, Rosie.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about Bowman College?
Sure, yeah. We're, as you mentioned, we're in our 30th year this year, and it's a school that provides education in both holistic nutrition and culinary arts. So we have two programs, one that's a nutrition consultant training program that's offered in person in California and online as well, and then we also have a natural chef program that's offered here in Berkeley, California.
And why do you think it's so important to teach people to eat properly?
You know, I think as a society, we've become a little bit disconnected from how food really nourishes us and how important it is to our health. You know, I think we have a lot of distractions in the modern age, and food and eating has become kind of like a second priority. So it's, you know, we find that it's really important to reconnect people with the reasons why food is so important, that the actual food molecules that people are taking in are going to make up the components of their eyes and their liver and their skin, as well as affect how they feel and how much energy they have.
And what would you consider when we say eating healthy? What do you consider healthy in foods?
Yeah, That's a great question, and I think it's different for everyone. Sticking with a whole foods diet, and what I mean by whole foods is foods that are found the way that they are, you know, that they naturally grow in nature, those are the best for everyone. So staying away from processed foods and eating food that is found the way it is in nature, and really listening to the body. That's a really important component of it, is just, you know, the body has this natural intelligence and a natural instinct for what it needs to thrive, to achieve optimal health. So just sticking to the whole foods and staying away from processed foods, and really just getting in touch with how food tastes and the seasons, and yeah, just okay. Like bringing back the enjoyment of food.
So, Rosie, there's so many diets that go on that are get sensationalized for a little while. You know, some people are on the paleo, some are on keto. How do you manage and sustain a diet that won't cause you to yo-yo, that will keep you at a nice normal level, what your weight should be?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. Some of these popular mainstream diets, you know, they focus on restricting certain macronutrients in food groups. And by macronutrients, I mean fats, carbohydrates, and proteins. And the problem with that is that we actually need all of them. So every single one of us needs all of the macronutrients. And the question is, like, every single person has different needs. So restricting some of these foods can make people feel like they're taking control of their diets and their health. And for some people that have food allergies and sensitivities, it's actually important to stay away from certain foods. But the more we restrict foods, the fewer foods we have available to us to get all the nutrients that we actually need in our diets and to achieve optimal health. So the more we increase our diversity of foods, it means we have an access to a broader diversity of nutrients. So being inclusive of different food groups is actually really important, as long as your body can actually tolerate them.
Can we eat in order to strengthen our bodies, to have the ability to recognize food and not so have so many allergies? Can we work at it through diet?
Absolutely, yeah. So one of the contributing factors to food allergies and food sensitivities is actually kind of a compromised digestion and compromised gut health. And so if we work to, in the beginning, a person might have to eliminate certain foods to just give that digestive tract a rest and allow for healing to occur. But over time, as the digestive tract rests and heals, and the immune system starts to stabilize and not react to foods as much, then we can be more inclusive in our diets and include more foods that enable us to get a wider diversity of nutrients.
Can we work on our diet or on our digestive systems with certain foods to enhance digestion?
Absolutely, yeah. So if we're sticking to high-quality proteins and high-quality fats and healthy fats that aren't damaged, as well as incorporating a wide array of micronutrients. And the micronutrients are vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients. So, these are found in high amounts in unprocessed whole foods. So processed foods, and one of the issues is that processed foods that are common today are, you know, they're plentiful in the macronutrients, the fats, carbohydrates, and proteins, but they're actually very deficient in micronutrients, which is a big part of the problem. So sticking to whole foods is a really good way to incorporate those vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients that we can't access through the unprocessed foods.
And whole foods make us feel full faster than processed food too, isn't it? Like we feel like we're full because we have so much more calories burned up in actually digesting whole foods.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, processed foods, because they're deficient in micronutrients, can actually leave us unsatisfied, which makes us eat more because the body is saying, oh, I still need nutrients, so let me eat more. And the problem is, like, if you're eating more unprocessed foods, then you're still malnourished, even though you're getting enough or more calories than you actually need. So if you stick to the whole foods and unprocessed foods, then you're actually getting, you know, your body feels nourished, it feels satiated, and it's, you know, the signals are such that, oh, the body is getting all of the nutrients it needs, so that's why it feels more satisfied.
Okay. How do we make those changes sustainable and long-term? What difficulties do we run up against if we're trying to change diet?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there are many factors involved, and the odds are kind of stacked against us. You know, we can learn a lot from how our ancestors ate, for example, but in a lot of ways, the way that they ate are a little bit discordant, or they can be discordant with the modern lifestyle. So eating well takes time, and that can be considered inconvenient in today's standards. You know, in addition to that, companies make food really cheap and convenient, very tasty and appealing, and especially, you know, when time is a commodity, like it is for most of us, it's a very appealing option. In addition to that, unhealthy processed foods are formulated with just the right balance of sugar, salt, and fat to promote addiction, which is a great business model for the people that are, you know, for the companies that are creating these foods. But the problem is then consumers, you know, so consumers will go back and continue to purchase them. But then the problem is that they get caught in this cycle of malnutrition. You know, globalization has made all sorts of foods available all the time. So it makes it more difficult to eat locally and with the seasons when you go to the grocery store and you see all these foods from all over the world all the time.
What is the importance of eating for the seasons?
So the importance of eating with the seasons is that local foods and seasonally grown foods are actually the most nutritious. Foods that don't have to be shipped from across the world, you know, the nutrients start getting depleted as soon as the foods are picked from the earth. So if they have to get shipped from far away and then they have to get stored in warehouses, then the nutrient value immediately starts depleting. So not only that, but food that is seasonal also tastes the best. Mm-hmm. So not only is the freshest, it's the best for you, but it actually tastes the best. And that's a great marker for your body to know that when something tastes delicious and it's a whole food, then that's your body telling you that this is really good for you.
Okay. And so when we go into great big supermarkets and there's all these beautiful colors and they're from all over the world, are the enzymes still live and active if it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks? What part does the enzymatic action in fruits and vegetables work in our systems?
Yeah, so various nutrients have kind of like different half-lives, meaning they are available for different amounts of time. So, for example, vitamin C is very fragile, and it's very susceptible to degradation with exposure to light, heat, and oxygen. So vitamin C will start degrading pretty immediately. But then there are other things like minerals that are actually more, their shelf life is higher. So, you know, different nutrients have different amounts of time that they will degrade. And certainly enzymes are going to be, you know, in those fruits and vegetables. And as they're around, they're going to start degrading various nutrients. And you can see that happening. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you can see when your produce is, like, not looking, you know, as good as it should be. It's a sign that, you know, enzymatic degradation is happening. The nutrients are starting to degrade. So it's like, you know, again, it's just getting in touch with the senses and just seeing what's looking good to the eyes and the smell and the taste.
Okay. Rosie, we're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about healthy diets.